Hi, I'm Christina, I'm an addict.
Hi, Christina.
So obviously I'm nervous, I want to get that first disclaimer out of the way. My heart is pounding out of my chest, and if you don't hear anything that you resonate with, then please listen to somebody else or go to another meeting. I can kind of only tell you my story. And my story is simple. I could kind of say it in about 2 minutes. I came in and did what I was told and now I'm clean. But that's the truth, and but I will elaborate on, you know, but just to say thanks, but just the reason I was thinking about it in that simple terms is because I'm working with a newcomer at the moment, and we're talking about the bank holiday and that sort of like these long voice notes about whether or not she should go out with her friends and all this sort of stuff. And I was just like, oh, wow. It really is like a day at a time, and that constantly having to hand it over a day at a time and just get your head in the pillow clean at the beginning. And I can take it for granted that that's not my urgent, you know, I do that, that's happened for me. And what I kind of deal with now on a daily basis is the unfolding of all the other sides of addiction. Because for me, it manifests in all areas of my life. And I'm so grateful to have a fellowship that it doesn't drug specific, it just says we are powerless of the disease of addiction. Because when I came in here, I came in because I couldn't stop using, and I couldn't stop using because I had a drink. So I already kind of got this link. I was like, I think there's a link there. But I didn't really link it to all the other stuff that had been completely unmanageable and shown complete powerlessness in my life, you know, since I can been alive, as far as I can remember. As a really young kid, I used to get, like, someone reminded me of this yesterday at a meeting, I used to get obsessed with reading, but I wouldn't read like a normal person. I would read walking down the street, like I would read, and my mum would be like, look at the road, you're gonna get run over. But I would obsessively read, and I would tick like book lists of books off. Like, I wasn't enjoying it, I wasn't actually taking in any information. It became an obsession of how much could I read, how, you know. And then it would go in fantasy. I was completely in fantasy. I was very lonely as a kid. Ooh, poor me. And it wasn't a bad, I didn't have a bad childhood at all, but I was very, very lonely and very isolated. So I just created all these coping mechanisms, because that's what they were. They were coping mechanisms that worked until they stopped working. So I, you know, fantasy. And food was a massive thing for me. I found it very difficult to deal with feelings. So I used food. So food was the thing for me. And then when I started drinking, I drank to excess. And drinking with bulimia gets really messy. I was the girl at a party who would be like throwing up in front of people going, I fucking need to... Sorry, I did it. Sorry. I was the girl at the party who would be pushing the door open and throwing up in front of my friends because I was drunk and bulimic, and that's really messy. So when I first found drugs, number one, I wasn't hungry. And it was like a spiritual hunger. I was like, oh, it was a different feeling. And that became my solution, because I could change my feelings. I also then found my clan. So if, you know, when I had gear, everyone was around. I was never lonely, although I felt, looking back, completely isolated, completely alone, completely spiritually bankrupt. But I didn't really have another solution at that point. So at that point, drugs saved my life, because I then, you know, I moved from being completely isolated and being in food kind of hell to just being in party hell. Mm-hmm. And it kind of was. I didn't, you know, I did have a lot of good times, of course. I would try and control my using so that I'd be around, like, the happy people who weren't addicts, who would be able to do it quite successfully. And I would always just look at them and think, I don't feel good, man. Like, how do you feel okay? And I would try and absorb that, like, hey, it's okay, we're having a good time. And I knew I wasn't. And I was, you know, I mean, I feel like quoting the, you know, the text here, but I was always going on the wagon for keeps. I was always like sending out those messages going, guys, you know, I'm not gonna make it to the concert we've paid for today because I've just pulled an all-nighter, but I'm gonna need your support because I'm giving it all up. And it just got, you know, everyone was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I had a calendar, and I would drew pink hearts on the calendar, and it would be, I did 3 months a number of times, but with no solution, with nothing had changed. So I was just white knuckling it. And all it took was for, you know, maybe I should just have a glass of champagne, I've been really good. Or maybe I should just, whatever. And before I knew it, I was back. And it was, you know, I'm really glad I had those experiences, because when I came in here and I heard the literature, I was like, oh, that's my experience. Oh my God, that's exactly what would happen. I would have one, and before I knew it, I was on my own. And so when I came into recovery because, well, I had, still have, a wife. And we got married, like, oh my God, that was the biggest hangover of my life. We got married after like 3 months. She's in a food fellowship and I'm here. You can imagine how healthy that was. We basically fixed on each other and got married while we were, you know, both still using. It was really chaotic. And then I would sit there off my face talking to her about her bulimia and saying how mine had just disappeared. How magic that was. And I had no idea of the irony. I was just like, so fixed. Like, I've not been sick once. This is amazing. And then it got to the point where she wasn't having fun anymore. And she was like, you know, every time, it was all the time. And it got to the point where she would put herself to bed and she was like, oh, this is out of control. And I, you know, she said, I think you might have a problem. And I just said, like, honey, my only problem is you. You know, I've always done this. I work really hard. I didn't work that hard. I actually do work really hard now, but I didn't work that hard. I, you know, I would get through work to make money to use. And, you know, my rock bottom was just the time when I'd had enough. I could have gone further. I don't need to go any further to be here. The consequences were getting bigger and bigger. And I'd done another 3 months, and I found myself again in the morning in the kitchen, completely on my own, using drugs, and my wife getting up to go to work, and she couldn't stand the sight of me. She just wanted to get out of the house as fast as possible. And she suggested I go to NA. And luckily, just before that, I'd sat down at the living room table and gone, I don't think I can drink. I don't have that cognition that I was like, when I drink, you become a bag of drugs, and I just manipulate the situation so that we can use. So I'd already kind of worked that out, because previously I'd just gone from, if I wasn't using, I'd use exercise, and if I wasn't exercising, I'd use food. And then before I knew it, I was in this place of really high anxiety where I'd have to use drugs to unwind. So it was just substituting. And then it would be, if I wasn't doing any of that, then my sexual behavior was out of control. So I'm completely clean, but I'm insane when it comes to, like, with my sexual behavior, and I had no idea what was going on. It felt hideous. It felt completely unmanageable my whole life up until I came in here. And luckily, when I came in, I'd had enough. I'd absolutely had enough. And I was like an hour and a half early for my first meeting, and they gave me the tea commitment in the first day. I was like, what even is this? It was the Soho meeting, and it was just like, okay, like, do I buy the tea? I don't really know, but I came back the next week, and I love to talk, so I didn't have a problem sharing. You know, it's lucky, because there's certain things that I'm really good at. I'm good at talking, other things that I'm bad at, but I've got better at in NA. And that's an absolute gift, and the skills that I've learned in NA, they massively go into my life out there. Because I didn't realise how afraid I was. I was just such a scared person. So I came in and I got a sponsor really quickly. Luckily, I shared, and he said, I have a gay man for a sponsor. And for me, that really works, because I really identify with the sexual behaviour. And he identified, he said, I'll be your temporary sponsor. And, you know, for someone who's covered in ink, I have commitment issues. So it was like, okay, temporary sounds good. I can deal with that. And he said, well, just send me some gratitude each night, and I've got this step 10 thing you're gonna do from the beginning. That's how I work it. I was like, okay. So I did that. We cracked on with the step work, and you know, I managed to do that. My first month, I was on a cruise ship working, choreographing a show, and they had meetings on the cruise ship. Like, what the hell? Friends of Bill and Lois, and it was for all different fellowships, but there was a meeting of an hour a day on the ship. In my first month of recovery, I wouldn't have made it without those. It's absolutely amazing. And so I met these really cool, amazing people from all over the world who were actually on the ship, and that kept me clean. I took my literature and I highlighted, like, to death. And then, thank you, 6 months later, I was away on a tour bus. Again, really wouldn't recommend it. I just finished my step work, and I wasn't able to carry the message, which I thought was actually great, because one of the things I was very nervous about was sponsoring. So I was like, great, I don't have to sponsor, I can just sort of sit in this. And it was really, really painful to sort of have the solution and not be able to carry it forwards. But I got through it. My sponsor suggested, I sort of had this little journal, and I would journal about an asset and a principle of the programme each day, and sort of how would my life look if it had that in it. And some of the words I didn't know. I didn't actually know what humility was. So if I don't know what it is, how am I going to practice it in my day to day? So, yeah, and then I came back, and in one of the first meetings, someone said to me, "Are you available for sponsorship?" And I was like, "Yes." Like, and I really didn't want to. I was completely afraid, completely self-obsessed. Me, I'm not going to be perfect. And it was a massive lesson that it's not about me. It's our primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And I'm not giving my opinion. I'm not going to give you my opinion, but I can take you through the program the way that it was taken for me. It's a simple program, not easy. And I have my sponsor who helps me. So sponsoring's been the most beautiful, wonderful thing. And so, yeah, I sponsor. I have never, and I'm not saying this, I'm like some sort of saint, but I've never ever missed a night of step 10 through a healthy dose of fear. Because that, when I was on the road, was the one thing that kept me connected. You know, I'm on a bus. I'm not with anybody. I've got no Wi-Fi, but at night I can go to bed, because going to bed was always something that I didn't do. Or if I did, it was hideous. So going to bed for me now, I sit, I write my gratitude for the day. It gives me a chance to reflect. I realise that actually I'm doing all right. Because the problems I have today are, you know, first-class problems. And sometimes I get too het up in what I want now. But you know what? Still today, keeping clean a day at a time is all I need to do. And, you know, if I hand my will and my life over to a power greater than myself, everything does fall into place in, you know, in the time it's meant to, not on my time. So I do, yeah, I do my step 10 each night, and I really enjoy it. I really enjoy writing about it, sort of like a little diary. I have a home group at Euston, and I have a commitment there, something again, a commitment. I was like, I work, my work schedule's all over the place, I'll never have a commitment. I do. It's a newcomer rep thing, and I'm well awkward. And then I think, oh my God, again, like, I work in the entertainment industry, so why am I so awkward? You've got somebody else who's probably 10 times more awkward than me. It's like, I'm good with kind of interfacing. I should be getting out of myself, and it's about them. So it's just funny that appearances, you know, I'm actually a very, very scared person, but by coming here, showing up, doing the right thing, doing stuff that I felt really uncomfortable, like going up to a newcomer and saying like, "Hi, I'm the newcomer rep," because ultimately I think you're going to reject me. I learn a day at a time how to be humble in the world and how to just look you face to face and say, "I'm not better than you and I'm not worse than you, I'm just a human and I'm just trying to get well." Can I leave it there?
Yeah, you are.
Can I leave it there?